Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/move to gas.
In the meantime, though, let's be talking to David Carey for our parenting slot. David, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. Fidget spinners. Can I just say one thing?
Oh, mother of God.
I know it. I don't want to say anything beyond this. No child needs more than one. Why am I seeing child after child with 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 fidget spinners? Parents, get a grip. One is plenty.
I don't know. It seems to be different sorts, or there's some sort of kudos in collecting them.
And it's nonsense.
And they'd be gone out of fashion in a fortnight.
Yeah, I have no problem with them in and of themselves.
Yeah.
Big deal, you know, but you don't need 10 of the damn things.
This is pest or power at its finest.
Parents, learn to say no.
First question. My 8-year-old discovered old photos of her sister who passed away when my daughter was 9 months old. Her sister suffered an illness and passed away at 4. She has no memories of her sister. She was too young, and we rarely talk about it as it's just so painful. She's now asking loads of questions, and despite having 7 years to prepare, I find it so difficult to talk to her about it. I'm separated from her father, so I'm not getting support from him on this. How do I talk to her about it? I don't want to get upset, and I do feel she needs to learn about her, but I'm worried I'm just too upset that I will upset her too. Has David any advice?
Well, this is unresolved grief.
Mm.
And you need some help with this. You don't need massive amounts of help. You don't need intensive psychotherapy. But I would suggest that you find a skilled counselor who can talk with you about the loss you had, which is a horrible tragedy, of mm-hmm. course, to lose a child. But you must be able to respond to your other child's questions. It's important. She wants to know. She needs to know. She has a right to know. But you're not going to be able to tell her unless you can come to grips with it yourself.
Yeah.
Don't be worried that you will harm her in the process. You won't. But I think you need to heal yourself a little bit before you can actually go on mm-hmm. and discuss it. This is the ghost in the family. I remember, Sean, many, many years ago, 8-year-old boy, I was supposed to be doing an assessment, and sometimes we ask children to draw pictures. So I asked him to draw a picture of his family, and he was drawing away and whatnot. And then I was questioning him, who's who? And this is my mommy, this is my daddy, this is my sister Patricia, this is my brother John, and this is my dead brother Sam.
Aww.
So, you know, and in speaking with the parents, afterwards, it transpired that the story was pretty much like this.
Mm.
They had lost a child when this boy was very young. He didn't quite remember him, but he was a ghost haunting the family, the dead child. You know, it
yeah.
just hadn't been resolved. It was there. It was in this boy's consciousness to a degree, and it came out. It's not something he had ever been questioning about. The parents were stunned, actually, when they saw the drawings. Like, where did this come from? He's never even mentioned the brother, and we've never discussed it, but you don't have to discuss it.
Yeah.
It's there.
It's just there.
It's in the system.
Do you ever resolve something like that? Because it's for any parent, it's unimaginable.
It's an unimaginable horror. Do you resolve it? Probably not, because you will always grieve for the loved ones you've lost. Which of us who are fully alive can't shed a tear for a loved one we may have lost 30 years before when
yeah.
we remember them, in fact? That's, of course, a trick that actors and actresses use on the stage. Mm. I have to cry. Well, how am I going to cry, Mr. Director? Think of something sad. Think of someone you loved that died, etc. But we can manage our grief. We get to the point where we can talk about it, even if we do cry whilst we're talking about it. So
yeah.
there would be no harm in this mom talking to her daughter about the deceased sister and shedding a tear. That's human sorrow, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's a normal feeling
yes,
to feel sad.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But if you're to the point now where you can't even conceive of talking about it, and you have to think about how I'm going to prepare myself for this conversation, then you're stuck.
Yeah.
And so you'll never forget it. It will always remain a wound, but it doesn't have to be a blockade between you and the other child.
Yeah.
Because she wants to know. She's asking questions that, who was this person? Mm. Where were they?
Yeah, of course, it's natural to know.
I found a photo of her. Yeah. Tell me, Mommy, about her. And Mommy is unable to use the words just yet. So get a little help. Not going to take a lot of time. And then you can sit down with the 8-year-old and you can talk.
Yeah.
And you'll be sad, of course, as you should be.
Just before that question, David's backside had hardly hit the chair before he started making a series of controversial statements about fidget spinners. there has been, of course, a backlash from some of the listeners. Ah, David, let's not be a grumpy goose about fidget spinners. They're cheap and the kids love them. They're doing no harm. It's not just kids, says another texter. I'm 32 and I've 3 fidget spinners. They're cool. There's somebody else says, I've just thrown 3 of the 4 of the kids' fidget spinners into the charity box. Fair play to David for shaming me into it. She's too spoiled. I need to wake up.
I'm damaging children
It's all gone a bit too far now.
I should have kept my big mouth shut.
No, but the interesting thing about it is that they're so... mothers are, for the most part, are texting each other saying, I was just in shop X. They have fidget spinners. And then people are going in, buying half a dozen of them and distributing them to other people who need them. And
yeah.
There's an awful pressure on parents to buy the Blinkin'
There
things.
Is a huge pressure on parents. And what I was trying to illustrate here through the fidget spinner model is that we don't need to overindulge and overgratify our children. Of course, they're going to want more and more, but they don't need more and more.
Yeah.
And is it? I think we need to stop and ask ourselves a question. Is it the right thing to do to give them more and more all the time?
Yeah.
I know they're cheap. I understand that.
But they're probably feeling this pressure as well because there's a peer pressure thing going on.
Absolutely. But where does all this end if we don't learn to say no?
Mm.
It will never end. It starts with fidget spinners and then it becomes something bigger and more expensive. And then it becomes the proper kind of clothing, et cetera, et cetera. And it can just never end.
Yeah. I have an 8-year-old girl who seems to have discovered that straddling the chair banister and rubbing up and down gives her a nice fuzzy feeling. I've caught her doing it on a few occasions and witnessed a flushed face of satisfaction after a session. I've told her it's not appropriate to do this in public and not to do it in front of anyone in the household. I've asked her why she did it and she said it makes her feel nice and gives her a warm fuzzy feeling. While I have told her not to do it in front of anyone and that it is a private thing, I haven't gone into any more detail with her. I haven't given out to her about it as I don't want her to feel it's a bad thing, but I want to discourage the behaviour. She has attended occupational therapy in the past for sensory processing difficulties and always had issues with how things feel on her, so she is very sensitive to touch. I no wonder if she's doing this to calm sensory overload or simply because it feels nice.
Most likely scenario, she's doing it because it feels nice. I'm surprised you asked her why she's doing it. That should have been obvious. It feels good to do it. So it's a way to feel nice and feel calm. You've approached it, for the most part, very appropriately. This is a private thing. We do not do it in public. We say this to our little boys, too, when they begin to pleasure themselves. This is private. We don't do it in public. You go to your room. This is a private time thing. And that's the end of the conversation. Distraction will help. Here, let's do something else. When you see her doing that, maybe not even say, let's do something else. Come on over here. I want to read you a little story.
Mm.
And end of conversation. Do not sexualize it. She's 8.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is a big issue for her. We've had questions like this before, most often with the little girls. I can't remember ever a parent sending in a question about a younger boy.
No, no. There was a question, I think, with a little boy who was getting erections.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, but that was involuntary. So, you know, just look. It's just something that they do. They discover it usually by accident.
Mm.
I would not link this to sensory integration issues necessarily.
Yeah.
Now, you may want to explore with your OT whether the fabric of her underwear or whatnot may be causing some irritation there, or the detergent you are using. So that possibly, but probably not an issue. But when in doubt, go back to the OT and say, oh, this is what's happening now. Do you think there's any connection? If that's the case, make some change in fabrics, et cetera, yeah, and detergent, and see if that doesn't cause the problem to... It's not really a problem.
No, it's just a thing that they're doing.
It's a thing that they do, and we're going to have to live with it, and the girls do it, and the boys do it. It's a particular problem for, and I think I've mentioned this on air before, for parents with boys mostly on the spectrum.
Yeah.
Where they will begin to discover the joy of self-stimulation. And often a very simplest solution at the most basic level is no elasticated waistbands, trousers with a belt, yeah, harder to get your hand down.
Yeah.
Simple solutions. At age 8, this is not any kind of sexualized activity. Take a deep breath. It's okay. Use distraction. It will disappear eventually.
Mm. My son is 4.5 and always has to win at games. He always has to be at new games or tasks on the first try too. If he doesn't win or can't do something straight away, he gets very upset. He takes it so badly and it can be hard to make him see the sense in it. We have always said, good job, but let's try again. It doesn't seem to be working. How can I explain this to him?
I don't think you can explain it to a 4-year-old. I think you need to organize some games and activities with him. Some of the time he will win. Some of the time he will lose. If he pitches a little fit when he loses, you just simply say, oh, that's too bad you lost, and you walk away and ignore that. Don't reinforce the sore loser behavior. He's just 4. I wouldn't be terribly concerned about it at age 4. It may be a sign of poor frustration tolerance, however, so I'd want to expand my observation of the child. How is he in other situations in which he can't get his way?
Mm.
Or is it just confined to, I have to win, I have to be first? Then we engineer all kinds of learning experiences at which he cannot be first, and he doesn't always win. And we gradually teach him, sometimes by modeling good coping skills aloud ourselves. Oh, I made a foolish move. Oh, that was really silly. I think that may be, I mightn't win this game. We say that aloud in front of the child. In other words, we present what is called a coping model of frustration tolerance rather than a mastery model.
Yes.
We talk it out. The child will see and hear, and that's how they incorporate into their own repertoire of coping skills some more pro-social behaviors. Nothing to be terribly alarmed about. Age 4, you got to expect some of this. Sometimes it extends on to middle childhood. Then we need to think about it in a little different way. But at age 4, treat the symptom, organize some activities, coping model, talk aloud. It'll be okay.
Someone says, my daughter was rubbing herself on the arm of the chair. It turned out she had thrush. So that's worth checking out.
Checking out the physical side of things, always.
Absolutely. My heart breaks for that mother. That's the mother who needs to talk to her child about a dead sibling. I can't imagine going through something like that. Maybe the father could tackle some of the questions if she doesn't feel up to it. Well, she says she's not.
She has
separation.
No,
she's getting no
support from
which
the father.
Is unfortunate.
Yeah.
And someone else says, anyone saying that fidget spinners don't do harm isn't a teacher. So there's a definite...
What the heck has that got to do with anything?
Because they bring them into school, they're distracted playing with the fidget spinners when they should be studying their books.
Gosh,
oh, God. Suddenly fidget spinners are great now.
I never said the fidget spinners are wrong. I said giving them too many fidget spinners isn't good parenting.
Right, we have to take a commercial break. After that, someone who's just discovered that their son is the class, back to the subject of fidget spinners.
Will it ever end?
Says, regarding that teacher, she should have a box like the one in my son's class. Every child has gotten into the practice of giving up their toys at the start of the day, and they collect them during their break if they want them, or leave them there until it's time to go home. This is about like in the old westerns where you'd have to put your gun in a box before you were allowed to go in the bar.
I'm very naive. I tend to believe that if the lessons offered in a classroom were stimulating enough, children wouldn't want to be playing with their toys.
Just a crazy idea.
I know. That'll never work. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
I've discovered to my absolute shock that my 11-year-old son is the class bully. I say I'm shocked because at home he's my angel. His teacher asked him to sit down with my husband and I and told us how several parents have complained about his behaviour towards their children. He's being aggressive, pushing and shoving kids, kicking them and calling them names. I just don't understand why he's doing this. He completely closes up when we talk to him about it and just sits there shrugging his shoulders. I've always considered him to be well behaved. He doesn't want for anything and has friends in the neighbourhood, but these kids don't go to his school. Where has this come from?
You're asking the wrong questions. You're asking why this is happening. I don't understand. Why is he doing this? Where has it come from? Those are interesting questions. They could lead to some very nice psychic archaeology or family archaeology, but they don't address the problem. Mm. The problem is aggression, name-calling, and allegedly bullying. That must be put to a stop. Let's label the symptoms. Let's talk to him about his behavior. Let's let him know that it is completely and utterly unacceptable, and that any occurrence of it will be dealt with immediately and swiftly in the family home and in school, and that there will be consequences. And that should, hopefully, solve the problem. If it does not, you may have to seek some consultation from a clinician of some kind. Mm. Now, he's been the little angel at home. I doubt that. At home, he's probably very clever about not getting caught.
Yeah.
Because rarely do we behave radically different in one context from another, although we can.
Mm.
But at this age, he's 11, you know, something's going wrong here somewhere. I don't know what it is, but I'm not going to go down that road. Mm. I'm going to treat this as we've got some problem behaviors here. He is hurting other people. Now, you and your partner, your parenting partner, and in fact, other extended family members, if necessary, need to address this issue. Mm. This cannot be allowed to continue. And this is where we draw a line in the sand in the family, that we do not hurt other people. We don't take their dignity away by calling them names. We don't hit them. We don't hurt their bodies. We don't intimidate, harass, or threaten. And if you do that, you can be sure something very unpleasant is going to happen to you as a result, because your father and I, or your mother and I, or whatever, are going to do something about this. So pull yourself together, son, because the game is up.
Mm.
See what he does with that.
Yeah. Though I suppose it's an automatic assumption, if you find out that it's your child is doing this, is that you're going to assume, well, there must be something wrong. They must be troubled by something. There must be some other root cause.
All of which could be true.
Yeah.
But we still have to address the behavior first.
Yeah.
Because if the behavior goes away, we don't believe anymore in the notion of symptom substitution, you know, that if you eliminate one particular troublesome behavior, another one will automatically crop up soon or later. We've kind of debunked that old psychological, that's really a psychoanalytical myth. So let's deal with the behavior, because this is serious stuff. He's 11. And he's hurting other children to the point where other children's parents are making complaints. Now, that's pretty high stakes.
Mm.
That's serious.
Yeah.
And I want to see this stop soon. Now you know about it. You're, of course, you're shocked, dismayed, probably at some level embarrassed, probably wondering, what did we do wrong? Maybe you didn't do anything wrong. I don't know.
Yeah.
Ask yourself some questions, but deal with it, please.
Yeah. Damien says, I fear for those kids who were accused of bullying. They are clearly troubled, but it's never mentioned. They also need help. Is that necessarily true?
Not necessarily true. Not necessarily true. Are they troubled? Well, let's define our terms here. What does that mean? I mean, in the broadest context, they are exhibiting grossly inappropriate behavior, which is offensive and hurtful to other people.
Mm.
So they need to learn better social skills, clearly. There are lots of ways to go around this and to go about this. But first and foremost, we try to put a stop to the offending behavior.
Yeah.
That's step number one.
Yeah, am I being too simplistic here? We don't know enough about this particular case, but if a parent in that situation files that their child has been bullying, they want to there to be something wrong with them rather than think, it's just boldness.
Because finding out there's something wrong is an explanation.
Yeah.
And that kind of removes the child from the behavior. You know, it's not my boy's hands and legs that are causing harm. It's his psychological upbringing or emotional wellness or this. So it isn't him. It's some other ethereal thing.
Mm.
And, you know,
you're kind of outsourcing the morality of it there, really, as well.
Well, exactly. I mean, there's all kinds of issues here. I try to keep it simple. let's deal with the behavior first.
Mm.
If you do that and it goes away, then you've solved the problem.
Yeah.
If it doesn't, then there could be, as your texter has said, underlying causes of a troubled nature and emotional disturbance that do need looking at. But before we go down that road, can't we just pull ourselves together as a family and make it clear we don't do this? And in fact, we're not going to let you continue to do this. And if you do, there's going to be a price to be paid for you.
Yeah. I have a 9-year-old granddaughter who was always told lies. We just found out she has told a friend that her mother doesn't feed her and locks her in the bedroom. It also seems that the more we take her out somewhere to or buy her something new, the more she does this. The rewards are getting less and less to try and curb her behaviour. If we ask her about it, she says she doesn't know. I just can't understand why she does it.
Well, have you talked to the mum and dad about this? Because this is grandma sending in the message about the 9-year-old who always told lies. Always. That's a big word.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'd want to get a little grip on that. Always.
Mm.
Reality check her. Ask her some questions. Well, tell me a little bit more about that. Your mother locked you in the bedroom? When exactly did that happen?
Mm.
What night was that? What time of day was it? Your mother doesn't feed you. Oh, that sounds tragic. It must be awful. You must be near starving to death. You don't have to jump to the bait all the time. I don't know why this child is telling those things. If we take her out somewhere or buy her something new, the more she does this, well,
stop doing that,
obviously. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stop taking her out so often and buying her something new so often. Let's link cause to effect here. She's 9. She can begin to make that connection.
Mm.
You're telling a lot of stories here. Some of them aren't quite true. You know, we can't go on this way. You're not going to go out this weekend and get your new fidget spinner.
Yes.
Because you told me that mommy locked you in the bedroom and didn't feed you.
Mm.
Now, I know that's not true, honey. So no fidget spinner. See what happens.
Yeah. It's, again, going back to consequences. David, always a pleasure.
Thank
David.
You, Sean.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Bully.